Chapter 47. The Price of a Ship. Finishing her morning wash, Nynaeve toweled herself dry and pulled on a fresh silk shift reluctantly. Silk was not as cool as linen, and even with the sun only just up, the heat in the wagon foretold another scorching day. Besides which, the thing was cut so she was half afraid it would fall in a puddle around her ankles if she breathed wrong. At least it was not damp with night sweat, as her discarded one was. Disturbing dreams had racked her sleep, dreams of Mugadine that woke her bolt upright, and those better than the ones she did not wake out of, dreams of Brigitta shooting arrows at her and not missing, dreams of the prophet's followers rioting through the menagerie, of being stranded forever in Samara because no vessel ever came, of reaching Salidar and finding Elida in charge, or Mugadine again there too. She had wakened weeping from that one. All just worry, of course, and natural enough. 3 nights camped here without a ship appearing, 3 sweltering days of standing blindfolded against that cursed piece of wall. That was enough to put anyone on edge, even without worrying whether Mugadine was closing in. But then, just because the woman knew they were with a menagerie did not mean she had to find them in Samara. There were other traveling menageries in the world besides those gathered here. Thinking up reasons not to worry was easier than not worrying, though. But why should I be anxious about Egwene? Dipping a split twig into a small dish of salt and soda on the washstand, she began scrubbing her teeth vigorously. Egwene had popped up in nearly every dream, yammering at her, but she could not see how Egwene came into them. In truth, anxiety and lack of sleep were only part of what made her mood vile this morning. The others were such minor things, but they were realities. A pebble in your shoe was small compared to having your head cut off, but if the pebble was there, and the chopping block might never be. It was not possible to avoid her own reflection, and her hair hanging loose about her shoulders instead of decently braided. Brush it how she would, the brassy red color never became less loathsome. And she knew all too well that a blue dress was laid out on the bed behind her. A blue to make even a tinker woman blink, and cut as low as the original red gown hanging on a peg. That was why she had on this precariously clinging shift. One dress like that was not enough, not according to Valen Luca. Clarine was at work on another pair in a virulent yellow, and there was talk of stripes. Nynaeve did not want to know about stripes. At least the man could let me choose the colors, she thought, working the split twig furiously. Or Clarine. But no, he had his own ideas and he never asked. Not Valen Luca. His color choices sometimes made her forget the necklines. I ought to throw it in his face. Yet she knew she would not. Birgitta flaunted herself in those dresses without the hint of a blush. The woman was certainly nothing like any of the stories about her. Not that she was going to wear the fool dress without protest because Birgitta did. She was not competing with the woman in any way. It was just that, if you have to do a thing, she growled around the twig, best you get used to it. What did you say? Elaine asked. If you're going to talk, please take that out of your mouth. The noise is disgusting otherwise. Wiping her chin, Nynaeve glared over her shoulder. Elaine was seated on her own narrow bed with her legs drawn up beside her, braiding her black-dyed hair. She already had on her white breeches, all sewn with spangles, and a snowy silk blouse with ruffles at the neck that was much too sheer. Her sequin-splattered white coat lay beside her. White. She also had 2 suits of clothes for performing, with a third in the making, all in white, if not exactly plain. If you are going to dress in that fashion, Elaine, you should not sit so. It's indecent. The other woman glowered sullenly, but she did put her slippered feet on the floor, and raised her chin in that haughty way she had. I think I may take a walk into the town this morning, she said coolly, still working at the braid. This wagon is confining. Rinsing her mouth, Nynaeve spat into the washbowl, loudly. The wagon certainly did seem smaller by the day. Maybe they did need to keep out of sight as much as possible. It had been her idea, one she was coming to regret, but this was becoming ridiculous. 3 days shut up with Elaine, except when they went to perform, was beginning to feel like 3 weeks, or 3 months. She had never before realized what an acid tongue Elaine had. A ship had to come. Any kind of ship. She would give every last coin hidden in the brick stove, every last jewel, anything for a ship today. Well, that wouldn't attract any attention, would it? But perhaps you could use the exercise. Or maybe it's just the way those breeches fit your hips. Blue eyes flared, but Elaine's chin remained high and her tone cold. I dreamed about Egwene last night, and between going on about Rand and Kyrian, I worry about what is happening there, even if you do not. In between, she said you were turning into a screaming harridan. Not that I think so, necessarily. I would have said a fishmonger. Now you listen to me, you ill-tempered little chit. If you don't... Still glaring, Nynaeve snapped her mouth shut, then drew breath slowly. With an effort, she forced her voice to be level. You dreamed about Egwene? Elaine nodded curtly. And she talked of Rand and Kyrian? The younger woman rolled her eyes in exaggerated exasperation and went on with her braid. Nynaeve made her hand loose its fistful of brassy red hair, made herself stop thinking of teaching the daughter heir of Bloody Andor some simple common courtesy. If they did not find a ship soon... If you can think of anything except how to show more of your legs than you already are, it might interest you to know that she was in my dreams, too. She said Rand won a great victory at Kyrian yesterday. I may be exposing my legs, Elaine barked, spots of color rising in her cheeks. But at least I am not flashing my... You dreamed of her, too? It did not take long to compare notes, though Elaine continued to show a viperish tongue. Nynaeve had had a perfectly good reason for screaming at Egwene, and Elaine probably had been dreaming of parading in front of Rand in her sequined costume, if not less. Saying so was simple honesty. Even so, it quickly became clear that Egwene had said the same things in both their dreams, and that left little room for doubt. She kept saying she was really there, Nynaeve muttered, but I thought it was just part of the dream. Egwene had told them often enough that it was possible, talking to someone in her dreams, but she had never said that she could. Why should I have believed? I mean, she said she'd finally recognized some spear he's taken to carrying as Seanchan work. That's preposterous. Of course. Elaine arched one eyebrow in an irritating manner. Just as preposterous as finding Sarandon and her Sredit. There must be other Seanchan refugees, Nynaeve. And spears are likely the least of what they left behind. Why could the woman not say anything without a barb? I notice how well you behaved. Elaine threw the finished braid over her shoulder, then tossed her head again, superciliously, for good measure. I do hope Rand is all right. Nynaeve sniffed. Egwene had said he would need days of rest before he was on his feet again, but he had been healed. The other woman continued, No one has ever taught him he mustn't overextend himself. Doesn't he know the power can kill him if he draws too much, or weaves when tired? That much is the same for him as for us. So she meant to change the subject, did she? Perhaps he doesn't know, Nynaeve told her sweetly, since there isn't a white tower for men. That made her think of something else. Do you think it really was Samael? Caught with a retort on the tip of her tongue, Elaine glowered at her sideways, then heaved a peevish sigh. It hardly matters to us, does it? What we should be thinking about is using the ring again. For more than meeting Egwene, there is so much to learn. The more I do learn, the more I know how much I don't know yet. No. Nynaeve did not really expect the other woman to take out the ring Tarangrial then and there, but she took a reflexive step toward the brick stove. No more trips to Tel Iran Riod for either of us, except to meet her. Elaine went right on without appearing to notice. Nynaeve could have been talking to herself. It isn't as though we need to channel. We won't give ourselves away that way. She did not look at Nynaeve, but there was a hint of bite in her voice. She maintained that they could use the power if they were careful. For all Nynaeve knew, Elaine did just that behind her back. I'll wager that if one of us visited the Heart of the Stone tonight, Egwene would be there. Think, if we could talk to her in her dreams, we'd not need to worry about encountering Mogadin in Tel Iron Riod any longer. You think it's easy to learn, then? Nynaeve asked dryly. If that's so, why hasn't she taught us already? Why hasn't she done it before this? Her heart was not in it, though. She was the one worried about Mogadin. Elaine knew the woman was dangerous, but it was like knowing a viper was dangerous. Elaine knew, but Nynaeve had been bitten. And being able to communicate without entering the world of dreams would be valuable quite aside from avoiding Mogadin. In any case, Elaine still was paying no attention to her. I wonder why she was so insistent we not tell anyone. That makes no sense. For a moment she worried her underlip with her teeth. There is another reason to talk to her as soon as we can. It didn't mean anything to me then, but the last time she spoke to me she vanished in mid-sentence. What I remember now is that before she did, she suddenly looked surprised and frightened. Nynaeve took a deep breath and pressed both hands hard against her stomach, in a vain effort to quiet sudden flutters. She managed to keep her voice flat, though. Mogadin? Light, you do have cheerful thoughts. No. If Mogadin could come into our dreams, I think we would know it by now. Elaine gave a small shiver. She did have some idea of how dangerous Mogadin was. Anyway, it wasn't that sort of look. She was frightened, but not enough for that. Then maybe she isn't in any danger. Maybe... Forcing her hands to her sides, Nynaeve compressed her lips angrily. Only she was not certain who she was angry with. Putting the ring away, out of sight, except for meetings with Egwene, had been a good idea. It had... Any venture into the world of dreams could have found Mogadin, and keeping clear of her was better than a good idea. She already knew she was overmatched. That thought rankled, worse every time she had it, but it was the simple truth. Yet now there was the chance that Egwene needed help, a small chance. Just because she was properly wary of Mogadin did not mean she was underrating the possibility. And it might be that Rand had one of the Forsaken after him in the same personal way that Mogadin was after her and Elaine. What Egwene reported, both of Cairhien and of the mountains, smacked of one man daring another to knock a chip off his shoulder. Not that she could see anything to do about that. But Egwene... Sometimes it seemed to Nynaeve that she had forgotten why she had left the Two Rivers in the first place. To protect young people from her village who had been caught in Aes Sedai webs. Not that much younger than herself, only a few years, yet the gap seemed wider when you were the village wisdom. Of course, the women's circle in Emmons Field had certainly chosen a new wisdom by now, but that did not make it less her village or them less her people. In her heart of hearts it made her no less the wisdom. Somehow, though, protecting Rand and Egwene and Matt and Perrin from Aes Sedai had become helping them survive, and finally, without her quite realizing when or how, even that goal had been submerged in other needs. Entering the White Tower to learn how better to pull down Warain had become a burning desire to learn how to heal. Even her hatred for Aes Sedai meddling in people's lives now coexisted with her desire to become one. Not that she really wanted to, but it was the only way to learn what she wanted to learn. Everything had become as tangled as one of those Aes Sedai webs, herself included, and she did not know how to escape. I am still who I have always been. I will help them as much as I can. Tonight, she said aloud, I will use the ring. Sitting down on the bed, she began to pull on her stockings. Stout wool was hardly comfortable in this heat, but at least part of her would be decently clothed. Stout stockings and stout shoes. Birgitta wore brocaded slippers and gossamer silk stockings that surely looked cool. She put the thought firmly out of her head. Just to see if Egwene is in the stone. If she isn't, I will come back, and we won't use the ring again until the next scheduled meeting. Elaine watched her with an unblinking stare that made her tug at her stockings in increasing discomfort. The woman did not say a word, but her expressionless gaze implied that Nynaeve might be lying. To Nynaeve it did. It did not help that the thought had flittered on the edge of consciousness that she could easily make sure the ring was not touching her skin when she went to sleep. There was no real reason to believe that Egwene would be waiting in the heart of the stone tonight. She had never really considered it. The thought had drifted up unbidden, but it had been there, and made it hard to meet Elaine's eyes. What if she was afraid of Mogadine? It was only good sense, however it galled to admit it. I will do what I must. She clamped down firmly on butterflies in the pit of her belly. By the time she tossed the shift down over her stockings, she was eager to don the blue dress and go out into the heat, just to escape Elaine's eyes. Elaine was just finishing helping her with the rows of small buttons up the back, and muttering that no one had helped her, as if anyone needed help with breeches, when the wagon door banged open, letting in a wave of hot air. Startled, Nynaeve jumped and covered her bosom with both hands before she could stop herself. When Birgitta climbed in instead of Valen Luca, she tried to pretend she was adjusting the neckline. Smoothing identical brilliant blue silk over her hip, the taller woman pulled her thick black braid over one bare shoulder with a self-pleased grin. "If you want to draw attention, don't bother fiddling. It is too obvious. Just breathe deeply." She demonstrated, then laughed at Nynaeve's scowl. Nynaeve made an effort to keep her temper, though why she should, she did not know. She could hardly imagine that she had felt guilt over what had happened. Gadel Kane was probably glad to get away from the woman, and Birgitta got to wear her hair the way she wanted. Not that that had anything to do with anything. "I knew someone like you in the Two Rivers, Marion. Calla knew every merchant's guard by his first name, and she certainly had no secrets from any of them." Birgitta's smile tightened. "And I knew a woman like you once. Mathena looked down her nose at men, too, and even had a poor fellow executed for coming on her by accident while she swam naked. She had never even been kissed until Jerys stole one from her. You'd have thought she had discovered men for the first time. She became so besotted Jerys had to go live on a mountain to escape her. Watch out for the first man to kiss you. One has to come along sooner or later." Fists clenching, Nynaeve took a step toward her, or tried to. Somehow Elaine was in between them, hands upraised. "Both of you stop it this minute," she said, eyeing them in turn with equal haughtiness. "Lini always said waiting turns men into bears in a barn and women into cats in a sack, but you will stop clawing at one another right now. I will not put up with it any longer." To Nynaeve's surprise, Birgitta actually blushed and mumbled a sullen apology. To Elaine, of course, but the apology itself was the surprise. Birgitta had chosen to stay close to Elaine. There was no need for her to hide, but after 3 days the heat was apparently affecting her as badly as it did Elaine. For herself, Nynaeve gave the daughter heir her frostiest stare. She had managed to maintain an even disposition while they waited, cooped up together. She had, but Elaine certainly had no room to talk. "Now," Elaine said, still in that icy tone, "did you have some reason for barging in like a bull, or have you simply forgotten how to knock?" Nynaeve opened her mouth to say something about cats, just a gentle reminder, but Birgitta forestalled her, if in a tighter voice. "Tom and Julin are back from the town." "Back!" Nynaeve exclaimed, and Birgitta glanced at her before returning to Elaine. "You did not send them?"
"I did not,"
Elaine said grimly. She was out of the door, Birgitta at her heels, before Nynaeve could say a word. There was nothing for it but to follow, grumbling to herself. Elaine had better not suddenly think she was the one giving orders. Nynaeve had still not forgiven her for revealing so much to the men. The dry heat seemed even worse outside, for all the sun still sat on the canvas wall around the menagerie. Sweat popped out on her brow before she reached the foot of the ladder, but for once she did not grimace. The two men sat on three-legged stools beside the cook fire, hair wild and coats looking as if they had rolled in the dirt. A trickle of red ran from beneath a wadded cloth Tom was pressing to his scalp, down across a fan of dried blood that covered his cheek and stained one long white mustache. A purple lump the size of a hen's egg stood out beside Julin's eye, and he held his thumb-thick staff of pale-ridged wood in a hand roughly wrapped with a bloody bandage. That ridiculous conical red cap, sitting on the back of his head, appeared to have been trampled. From the noises inside the canvas walls, the horse handlers were already at work cleaning cages, and no doubt Sarandon was with her Sredit. None of the men would go near them. But there was relatively little stir around the wagons as yet. Petra was smoking his long-stemmed pipe while he helped Clarine prepare their breakfast. Two of the Chavanas were studying some piece of apparatus, with Muellen, the contortionist, while the other pair were chatting with two of the six female acrobats Luca had hired away from Celia Serrano's show. They claimed to be sisters named Murasaka, despite being even more disparate in looks and coloring than the Chavanas. One of the pair, lounging in colorful silk robes with Brug and Teyrek, had blue eyes and almost white hair, the other's skin nearly as dark as her eyes. Everyone else was already garbed for the day's first performance, the men bare-chested in colorful breeches, Muellen in gauzy red and a tight-matching vest, Clarine in high-necked green sequins. Tom and Julin attracted a few looks, but fortunately no one thought it necessary to come inquire after their health. Perhaps it was the hangdog way they sat, shoulders slumped, eyes on the ground under their boots. Doubtless they knew they were in for a tongue-lashing that would sear their hides. Nynaeve certainly intended to give them one. Elaine, though, gasped at the sight of them and went running to kneel beside Tom, all the anger of a moment before taking wing.
"What happened? Oh, Tom, your poor head! That must hurt so. This is beyond my abilities. Nynaeve will take you inside and see to it. Tom, you are too old to get yourself into scrapes like this."
Indignantly, he fended her off as best he could while holding his compress in place. "Leave over, child. I've had worse than this falling out of bed. Will you leave over?"
Nynaeve was not about to do any healing, despite being angry enough. She planted herself in front of Julin, fists on her hips, and a brook-no-nonsense answer-me-right-now look on her face.
"What do you mean, sneaking off without telling me?" As well to start letting Elaine know that she was not in charge. "If you had gotten your throat cut instead of a mouse on your eye, how would we know what had happened to you? There was no reason for you to go. None. Finding a ship has been seen to."
Julin glared up at her, shoving his cap forward over his forehead.
"Seen to, is it? Is that why the three of you have taken to stalking about like—"
He cut off as Tom groaned loudly and swayed. Once the old gleeman had quieted Elaine's concerned flutters with protestations that it had just been a momentary pang that he was fit to attend a ball, and given Julin a significant glance he obviously hoped the women would not see, Nynaeve turned a dangerous eye back to the dark Tyran to learn just what it was he thought they had been stalking about like.
"A good thing we did go," he told her instead in a tight voice. "Samara's a school of silver pike around a chunk of bloody meat. There are mobs on every street hunting dark friends, and anybody else who isn't ready to hail the prophet as the one true voice of the dragon reborn."
"It started 3 hours or so ago near the river," Tom put in, giving in with a sigh to Elaine's bathing his face with a damp cloth.
He appeared to be ignoring her mutters, which must have taken some doing, since Nynaeve could clearly hear, "Foolish old man," and "Need someone to take care of you before you get yourself killed," among other things, in a tone easily as exasperated as it was fond.
"How it began, I don't know. I heard Aes Sedai blamed, White Cloaks, Trollocs, everybody but the Seanchan, and if they knew the name, they'd blame them, too."
He winced at Elaine's pressure.
"The last hour we were a little too personally involved in getting clear to learn much."
"There are fires," Birgitta said.
Petra and his wife noticed her pointing and stood to stare worriedly. Two dark plumes of smoke rose above the canvas wall in the direction of the town. Juelin rose and looked Nynaeve in the eyes with a hard gaze. It is time to go. Maybe we'll stand out enough for Mogadine to find us, but I doubt it. There are people running every direction they can run. In another 2 hours it won't be a pair of fires, it will be 50, and avoiding her won't do much good if we're torn to pieces by a mob. They'll turn to the shows once they have smashed what can be smashed in the town.
Don't use that name,
Nynaeve said sharply, with a frown for Elaine that the younger woman did not see. Letting men know too much was always a mistake. The trouble was he was right, but letting a man know that too quickly was a mistake too.
I will consider your suggestion, Juelin. I would hate to run away for no reason, and then learn that a ship had come right after we left.
He stared at her as if she were mad, and Tom shook his head despite Elaine's holding it still for her washing. But a figure making his way through the wagons brightened Nynaeve. Perhaps it's come already.
Uno's painted eyepatch and scarred face, his topknot and the sword on his back, attracted casual nods from Petra and the various Chavanas, and one shiver from Muellen. He had made each of the evening visits himself, though with nothing to report. His presence now had to mean there was something. As usual, he grinned at Birgitta as soon as he saw her, and rolled his lone eye in an ostentatious stare at her exposed bosom. And as usual, she grinned back and eyed him up and down lazily. For once, though, Nynaeve did not care how reprehensibly they behaved.
Is there a ship?
Uno's grin faded.
There's a ship, he said grimly. If I can get you to it whole.
We know all about the rioting. Surely 15 Shinarans can get us safely through.
You know about the rioting, he muttered,
eyeing Tom and Juelin.
Do you know Massima's people are fighting white cloaks in the streets? Do you know he's ordered his people to take Amadicia with fire and sword? There are thousands across the river already.
That's as may be, Nynaeve said firmly. But I expect you to do as you said you would. You promised to obey me, if you recall.
She put just a slight emphasis on the word and gave Elaine a meaning look. Pretending not to see, the woman stood, bloodied washcloth in her hand, and directed her attention to Uno.
I have always been told that Shinarans are among the bravest soldiers in the world.
That razor edge to her voice had suddenly become regal silk and honey.
I heard many stories of Shinaran bravery when I was a child.
She rested a hand on Tom's shoulder, but her eyes remained on Uno.
I remember them still. I hope I shall always remember them.
Birgitta stepped closer and began massaging the back of Uno's neck while she looked him straight in the eye. That glaring red eye on his eye patch did not seem to upset her at all.
3,000 years guarding the Blight, she said gently.
Gently? It had been 2 days since she had spoken to Nynaeve like that.
3,000 years, and never a step back not paid for 10 times over in blood. This may not be Enkara, or the Serral step, but I know what you will do.
What did you do? He growled. Read all the flaming histories of the flaming borderlands?
Immediately he flinched and glanced at Nynaeve. It had been necessary to tell him she expected absolutely clean language out of him. He was not taking it well, but there was no other way to prevent backsliding, and Birgitta should not frown at her.
Can you talk to them? He directed at Tom and Juelin. They're fools to try this.
Juelin flung up his hands, and Tom laughed out loud.
Did you ever know a woman who listened to sense when she didn't want to? The Glee Man replied.
He grunted as Elaine pulled his compress away and began dabbing at his split scalp with perhaps a bit more force than was strictly necessary. Uno shook his head.
Well, if I'm to be cousined, I suppose I'll be cousined. But mark this, Massima's people found the ship. River Snake or something like. Not an hour after it docked, but White Cloak seized it. That's what started this little row. The bad news is the White Cloaks still hold the docks. The worst is Massima may have forgotten the ship. I went to see him and he wouldn't hear of ships,
All he can talk about is hanging white cloaks and making Amadisia bend knee to the Lord Dragon if he has to put the whole land to the torch, but he hasn't bothered to tell all of his people. There's been fighting near the river and may still be. Getting you through the riots will be bad enough, but if there's a battle at the docks, I make no promises. And how I'm to put you on a ship in white cloak hands, I don't begin to know. Letting out a long breath, he scrubbed sweat from his forehead with the back of a scarred hand. The strain of so long a speech without cursing was plain on his face. Nynaeve might have relented on his language at that moment if she had not been too stunned to speak. It had to be coincidence. Light, I said anything for a ship, but I didn't mean this. Not this. She did not know why Elaine and Birgitta were staring at her with such blank expressions. They had known everything she had, and neither had brought up this possibility. The three men exchanged frowns, obviously aware that something was going on and just as obviously unaware what it was, for which thanked the light. Much better when they did not know everything. It just had to be coincidence. In one way, she was more than happy to focus on another man making his way through the wagons. It gave an excuse to pull her eyes away from Elaine and Birgitta. In another way, the sight of Galad made her stomach settle right to her shoes. He wore plain brown and a flat velvet cap instead of his white cloak and burnished mail, but his sword still rested on his hip. He had not been to the wagons before, and the effect of his face was dramatic. Muellen took an unconscious step toward him, and the two slender acrobats leaned forward, mouths open. The Chavannas were plainly forgotten, and scowling for it. Even Clarine smoothed her dress as she watched him, until Petra took his pipe from his mouth and said something. Then she went over to where he sat, laughing, and snuggled his face to her plump bosom, but her eyes still followed Galad over her husband's head. Nynaeve was in no mood to be affected by a handsome face. Her breath hardly quickened at all. "It was you, wasn't it?" she demanded before he even reached her. "You seized the river snake, didn't you? Why?" "River serpent," he corrected, eyeing her incredulously. "You did ask me to secure you passage."
"I didn't ask you to start a riot."
"A riot?" Elaine put in.
"A war, an invasion, all begun over this vessel."
Galad answered calmly. "I gave Nynaeve my word, sister. My first duty is to see you safely on your way to Camelin, and Nynaeve, of course. The children would have had to fight this prophet soon or late."
"Couldn't you simply have let us know the ship was here?" Nynaeve asked wearily. "Men and their word. It was all very admirable sometimes, but she should have listened when Elaine said he did what he saw as right, no matter who was hurt."
"I don't know what the prophet wanted the ship for, but I doubt it was so you could take passage downriver." Nynaeve flinched. "Besides which, I paid the captain your passage while he was still unloading his cargo. An hour later, one of the two men I left to make sure he did not sail without you came to tell me the other man was dead and the prophet had taken the ship. I don't understand what you are so upset about. You wanted a ship, needed a ship, and I got you one." Frowning, Galad addressed Tom and Julian. "What is the matter with them? Why do they keep staring at one another?"
"Women," Julian said simply, and got slapped on the back of the head by Birgitta for his trouble. He glared at her.
"Horseflies have a nasty bite," she grinned, and his glower faded into uncertainty as he readjusted his cap.
"We can sit here all day discussing right and wrong," Tom said dryly, "or we can take this vessel. Passage has been paid, and there's no getting the price back now."
Nynaeve flinched again. However he meant it, she knew how she heard it.
"There may be trouble reaching the river," Galad said. "I donned this clothing because the children are not popular in Samara at the moment, but the mobs can set on anyone."
He eyed Tom doubtfully, with his white hair and long white moustaches, and Julian a little less so. Even dishevelled, the Tyran looked hard enough to pound posts, and then turned to Uno. "Where is your friend? Another sword might be useful until we reach my men." Uno's smile was villainous. Clearly there was no more love between them than at their first meeting. He's about, and maybe one or two more. I'll see them to the ship if your white cloaks can hold on to it, or if they can't."
Elaine opened her mouth, but Nynaeve spoke up quickly. "That's enough, both of you." Elaine would just have tried honeyed words again. They might have worked, but she wanted to lash out at something, anything. "We need to move quickly." She should have considered when she flung two madmen at the same target what might happen if they both hit at once. "Uno, gather the rest of your men as fast as you can." He tried to tell her they were already waiting on the other side of the menagerie, but she plowed on. They were madmen, both of them. All men were. "Galad, you—"
"Rouse and rise!"
Luca's shout cut into her words as he trotted between the wagons, limping and with a bruise discoloring the side of his face. His scarlet cape was soiled and torn. It seemed Tom and Julian were not the only ones to have entered the town.
"Brug, go tell the horse handlers to hitch the teams. We'll have to abandon the canvas."
He grimaced at the words.
"But I mean to be on the road in under an hour. Andaya, Kuan, pull your sisters out. Wake anybody still asleep, and if they're washing, tell them to dress dirty or come naked. Hurry, unless you're ready to proclaim the prophet and march to Amadisia. Chin Akima's lost his head already, along with half his performers, and Celia Serrano and a dozen of hers were flogged for being too slow. Move!"
By that time, everybody except those around Nynaeve's wagon were at the run. Luca's limp slowed as he approached, eyeing Galad warily, and Uno, for that matter, though he had seen the one-eyed man twice before.
"Nana, I want to talk to you," he said quietly. "Alone."
"We will not be going with you, Master Luca," she told him.
"Alone," he said, and seized her arm, hauling her away.
She looked back to tell the others not to interfere and found there was no need. Elaine and Birgitta were hurrying off toward the canvas wall that encompassed the menagerie, and except for a few glances at her and Luca, the four men were engrossed in conversation. She sniffed loudly. Fine men they were to watch a woman manhandled and do nothing. Jerking her arm free, she strode along beside Luca, silk skirts swishing her displeasure.
"I suppose you want your money now that we are going? Well, you shall have it. 100 gold marks, though I think you should allow something for the wagon and horses we're leaving behind, and for what we've brought in. We have certainly increased the number of your patrons. Morellin and Julian with their high walking, me with the arrows. Tom,
do you think I want the gold, woman?"
he demanded, rounding on her.
"If I did, I'd have asked for it the day we crossed the river. Have I asked? Did you ever think why not?"
In spite of herself, she took a step back, crossing her arms beneath her breasts sternly, and immediately wished she had not. That stance more than emphasized what she was exposing. Stubbornness kept her arms where they were. She was not about to let him think she was flustered, especially since she was, but surprisingly, his eyes remained on hers. Maybe he was ill. He had never avoided looking at her bosom before, and if Phelan Luca was not interested in bosoms or gold...
"If not about the gold, then why do you want to talk to me?"
"All the way back here from the town," he said slowly, following her. "I kept thinking that now you would finally go."
She refused to back away again, even when he was standing over her and staring down intently. At least he was still looking at her face.
"I don't know what you are running from, Nana. Sometimes I almost believe your story. Morellin certainly has a noblewoman's manner about her, at least. But you were never a lady's maid. The last few days I've half expected to find the pair of you rolling on the ground, tearing one another's hair. And maybe Marion in the pile."
He must have seen something on her face, because he cleared his throat and hurried on.
"The point is, I can find someone else for Marion to shoot at. You do scream so beautifully anyone would think you were truly terrified, but..."
He cleared his throat again, even more hastily, and drew back.
"What I am trying to say is that I want you to stay. There's a wide world out there, 1,000 towns waiting for a show like mine, and whatever is chasing you will never find you with me. A few of Akima's people and some of Celia's who haven't been marched off across the river, they're joining me. Valen Luca's show will be the greatest the world has ever seen.
Stay? Why should I stay? I told you from the first we only wanted to reach Gildan, and nothing has changed.
Why?
Why, to have my children, of course. He took one of her hands in both of his.
Nana, your eyes drink my soul. Your lips inflame my heart. Your shoulders make my pulse race.
She cut in hurriedly. You want to marry me? She said incredulously.
Marry? He blinked.
Well, yes, of course. His voice picked up strength again, and he pressed her fingers to his lips.
We will be wed at the first town where I can arrange it. I've never asked another woman to marry me.
I can quite believe it, she said faintly. It took some effort to pull her hand free. I am sensible of the honor, Master Luca, but...
Valen, Nana. Valen.
But I must decline. I am betrothed to another. Well, she was, in a way.
Lan Mandragoran might think his signet ring just a gift, but she saw it differently.
And I am going.
I should bundle you up and carry you with me.
Dirt and rips somewhat spoiled the grandiloquent flourish of his cape as he drew himself up.
With time, you would forget the fellow.
You try it, and I'll have Uno make you wish you had been sliced for sausage.
That barely deflated the fool man at all. She drove a finger hard against his chest.
You do not know me, Valen Luca. You don't know anything about me. My enemies, the ones you dismiss so easily, would make you take off your skin and dance in your bones, and you would be grateful if that was all they did. Now I am going, and I don't have time to listen to your drivel. No, don't say any more. My mind is set, and you will not change it, so you might as well stop blathering.
Luca sighed heavily.
You are the only woman for me, Nana. Let other men choose boring flutterers with their shy sighs. A man would know he had to walk through fire and tame a lioness with his bare hands every time he approached you. Every day an adventure, and every night...
His smile almost earned him boxed ears.
I will find you again, Nana, and you will choose me. I know it in here.
Thumping his chest dramatically, he gave his cape an even more pretentious swirl.
And you know it too, my dearest Nana. In your fair heart you do.
Nynaeve did not know whether to shake her head or gape. Men were mad. All of them. He insisted on escorting her to her wagon, holding her arm as if they were at a ball. Stalking through the turmoil of horse handlers rushing to hitch teams, the din of men shouting, horses whickering, bears growling, leopards coughing, Elaine found herself muttering under her breath to match any of the animals. Nynaeve had no room to talk about her showing her legs. She had seen the way the woman stood up straighter when Valen Luca appeared, and breathed deeper, too. For Galad as well, for that matter. It was not as if she enjoyed wearing breeches. They were comfortable, true, and cooler than skirts. She could see why men chose to wear men's clothes. Almost. There was the problem of getting past the feeling that the coat was really a dress that barely covered your hips. She had just managed that so far. Not that she intended to let Nynaeve know, her and her viperish tongue. The woman should have realized Galad would ignore the cost of keeping his promise. It was not as if Elaine had not told her about him often enough, and involving the prophet. Nynaeve just acted without thinking about what she was doing.
"Did you say something?" Birgitta asked.
She had gathered her skirts over one arm to keep up, unashamedly baring her legs from blue brocaded slippers to well above her knees, and those sheer silk stockings did not hide as much as breeches. Elaine stopped dead.
What do you think of how I am dressed?
It allows freedom of movement, the other woman said judiciously. Elaine nodded.
Of course, it's good that your bottom isn't too big, as tight as those.
Striding on furiously, Elaine tugged the coat down with sharp yanks. Nynaeve's tongue had nothing on Birgitta's. She really should have required some oath of obedience, or at least some show of proper respect. She would have to remember that once it came time to bond Rand.
When Birgitta caught up to her, wearing a sour expression as if she were driven almost beyond endurance, neither of them spoke. Dressed in green sequins, the pale-haired Shanshan woman was using her goad to guide the huge bull Sredit as his head pushed the heavy wagon holding the black-maned lion's cage. A horse handler in a shabby leather vest held the wagon tongue, steering the wagon around to where its horses could be hitched more easily. The lion stalked back and forth, lashing his tail and now and then giving a hoarse cough that sounded like the beginning of a roar.
"Sarandon," Elaine said, "I must speak to you."
"In a moment, Merlin."
Fixed on the tusked gray animal as she was, her quick slurred way of speaking made her nearly unintelligible.
"Now, Sarandon, we have little time."
But the woman did not halt the Sredit and turn until the horse handler called out that the wagon was in position. Then she said impatiently,
"What do you need, Merlin? I have much to do yet, and I would like to change. This dress is not for traveling."
The animal stood waiting patiently behind her. Elaine's mouth tightened slightly.
"We are leaving, Sarandon."
"Yes, I know. The riots. Such things should not be allowed. If this prophet thinks to harm us, he will learn what Meron's sonnet can do."
She twisted to scratch Mare's wrinkled shoulder with her goad, and he touched her shoulder with his long nose. "A trunk," Sarandon called it.
"Some prefer Lopar or Grom for battle, but Sredit properly used."
"Be quiet and listen," Elaine said firmly. It was an effort to maintain her dignity, with the Shanshan woman being obtuse, and Birgitta standing aside with her arms folded. She was certain Birgitta was just waiting to say something else cutting.
"I do not mean the show. I mean myself and Nana and you. We are taking ship this morning. In a few hours we will be beyond the prophet's reach forever."
Sarandon shook her head slowly.
"Few river craft can carry Sredit, Morellin. Even if you found one that can, what would they do? What would I do? I do not think I can earn as much by myself as I can with Master Luca, not even with you high-walking and Marion shooting her bow. And I suppose Tom would juggle. No. No, it is better if we all remain with the show."
"The Sredit will have to be left behind," Elaine admitted. "But I am sure that Master Luca will take care of them. We will not be performing, Sarandon. There's no more need for that. Where I am going, there are those who would like to learn about..."
She was conscious of the horse handler, a lanky fellow with an incongruously bulbous nose, standing close enough to listen.
"About where you came from. Much more than you've told us already."
No, not listening. Leering. By turns at Brigitte's bosom and at her legs. She looked at him until his insolent grin turned sickly, and he scuttled back to his duties. Sarandon was shaking her head again.
"I am to leave Meron's sonnet and Naren to be cared for by men who are afraid to come near them? No, Merlin. We will stay with Master Luca. You too. It is much better. Remember how bedraggled you were the day you came? You do not want to return to that."
Drawing a deep breath, Elaine stepped closer. No one but Birgitta was close enough to overhear, but she did not want to take foolish chances.
"Sarandon, my true name is Elaine of House Trakand, daughter heir of Andor. One day I will be queen of Andor."
Based on the woman's behavior the first day, and even more on what she had told them of Shanshan, that should have been enough to quell any resistance. Instead, Sarandon looked her straight in the eye.
"You claimed to be a lady the day you came, but..."
Pursing her lips, she eyed Elaine's breeches.
"You are a very good high walker, Merlin. With practice, you may be good enough to perform before the Empress one day. Everyone has a place, and everyone belongs in their place."
For a moment, Elaine's mouth worked soundlessly. Sarandon did not believe her.
"I have wasted quite enough time, Sarandon."
She reached for the woman's arm, to haul her along bodily if necessary, but Sarandon caught her hand, twisted, and with a wide-eyed yelp, Elaine found herself on tiptoe, wondering whether her wrist would break before her arm came out of her shoulder. Birgitta just stood there, arms folded under her breasts, and had the nerve to raise an eyebrow questioningly. Elaine gritted her teeth. She would not ask for help.
"Release me, Sarandon," she demanded, wishing she did not sound quite so breathy. "I said release me."
Sarandon did, after a moment, and stepped back warily.
"You are a friend, Morellen, and always will be. You could be a lady one day. You have the manner, and if you attract a lord, he may take you for one of his Asa. Asa sometimes become wives. Go with the light, Morellen. I must finish my work."
She held out the goad for Mare to curl his trunk around, and the big animal let her lead him ponderously away.
"Sarandon," Elaine said sharply. "Sarandon!"
The pale-haired woman did not look back. Elaine glared at Brigitta.
"A great lot of help you were," she growled, and stalked off before the other woman could reply.
"From what I hear and what I've seen, you have spent considerable time teaching the woman she has a backbone. Did you expect me to help you take it away from her again?"
"I was not trying to do any such thing," Elaine muttered. "I was trying to take care of her. She is a long way from home, a stranger wherever she goes, and there are some who would not treat her kindly if they learned where she came from."
"She seems well able to take care of herself," Brigitta said dryly. "But then, perhaps you taught her that, too. Perhaps she was helpless before you found her."
Elaine's stare seemed to slide off her like ice sliding down warm steel.
"You just stood and watched her. You are supposed to be my..."
She glanced around. It was only a glance, but several of the horse handlers ducked their heads away.
"My warder. You are supposed to help me defend myself when I cannot channel."
Brigitta looked around, too, but unfortunately there was no one close enough to make her hold her tongue.
"I will defend you when you are in danger. But if the danger is only of being turned over someone's knee because you've behaved like a spoiled child, I will have to decide whether it's better to let you learn a lesson that might save you the same or worse another time. Telling her you were heir to a throne? Really? If you are going to be Aes Sedai, you had better start practicing how to bend the truth, not break it into shards."
Elaine gaped. It was not until she stumbled over her own feet that she managed to say,
"But I am."
"If you say so," Brigitta said, rolling her eyes at the spangled breeches.
Elaine could not help herself. Nynaeve wielding her tongue like a needle, Sarandon stubborn as two mules, and now this. She threw back her head and screamed with frustration. When the sound died, it seemed as if the animals had quieted. Horse handlers stood about, staring at her. Coolly, she ignored them. Nothing could worm its way under her skin now. She was as calm as ice, perfectly in control of herself.
"Was that a cry for help?" Brigitta said, tilting her head. "Or are you hungry? I suppose I could find a wet nurse in..."
Elaine strode away with a snarl that would have done any of the leopards proud.